Hey everyone, quick programming note before we get started. I'm going to talk a bunch of NBA action today for this Wednesday, and then around the 40-minute mark of the podcast, going to bring on Chris Durrell, DFSR's lead PGA analyst. He's going to come on, talk a little bit about the Valspar Championship this week and what you can take into mind when you're trying to put together DFS PGA lineups. So start with the basketball, stay for the golf, and let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Wednesday, March 8th. I am Doug Norrie, sitting in all by myself here, breaking down a full Wednesday in the NBA for FanDuel and DraftKings. I'm from Daily Fantasy, sportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning DFS NBA. You go over to the site now, DFSR.com/membership. You grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system that's powered by Lineup Lab. It's going to give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You're all set to go. It includes our hockey projections as well. Baseball when the time comes, which is really coming down the pike sooner than you'd think, less than a month away in baseball. So all of our projections, everything we offer is offered under one subscription package. I think you'll be happy with it. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. We're coming off it was a pretty interesting three-game slate last night. Westbrook obviously went crazy. Not a lick of D played in the Wizards and Suns game, and then and obviously with Dirk getting to 30,000 points in pretty dramatic fashion, where he just kind of went like full heat check in the first quarter and beyond. So it was actually for only three games last night, pretty exciting group of basketball, I would say, just from like a watching perspective. And then and obviously had a ton of DFS implications as well, with some really high scoring games that stayed pretty close. Most notably that Phoenix and Washington game. Today we get a bunch of different games on the slate tonight. Eleven to be exact. So there's got a lot to take a look at today. I'm gonna roll through the games here and just try and just kind of mention or shed some light on either things that we news that we're waiting on for injury pieces. This is 11:30 Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. So always when you're in those hours before lineup lock, some of those things are gonna be question marks, and then news will trickle in throughout the day that'll crystallize some of what we're trying to look at for tonight's NBA. Some things we already know, though, and one of those things is for the Orlando and Chicago game, which is the first game on the slate. Vucevic has already been ruled out, so that's going to mean a lot more Bismack Biyombo. Now, we've seen his price on FanDuel specifically came up about $1,100 from slate over slate, as they corrected for the idea that he was that he was getting all of the minutes, and he is up at $5,500 on DraftKings. So on FanDuel, I still think you see him as a chalk play. The Magic have basically said when Vuce is out, Biyombo's played 34 and 42 minutes in the last two games. He's basically what they want to do at center. They don't have really any other big body options after him. So him playing a lot of minutes is completely reasonable. I think you're not really worried about the blowout here, just because the Bulls themselves aren't very good. The Orlando's lost the last two games, but they were able to hang both times. Only lost by one to Washington and then eight to the Knicks on Monday. So you're not worried about the blowout here at all. I do think Biyombo is likely going to be a chalk start. I don't think he's going to be in that like 80% range that we saw him on Monday when he was still 3,500. I think the price coming up a little bit will decrease some of his ownership, but I still think you see him as the heavy chalk play, and it's correct. He's been really, really good since taking over at center. He went 14 and 15 the first game and 10 and 14 the second game. That's just about enough the second time to hit value. So, you know, he gets there probably about like 6x. So you're not really worried about, I don't think you're worried about the floor because of the minutes. So this is all to say, we know about Biyombo. I do think that he ends up becoming a chalk play. I don't think it's as crystal clear on DraftKings. And then the rest of the Magic, I find all to be pretty much still in that value zone. Aaron Gordon, although, you know, Gordon played 34 minutes, but then only played 30 the last game. I think you're a little worried that they're still not totally committed to playing him big minutes. His price has come up a little bit. He's 5,700 on FanDuel. I don't think that's an amazing bargain at this point, but he's still, I still think he's a pretty high floor play. I still think you can go down the Terrence Ross path. He's still only 4,500 on FanDuel. I'll probably be playing him in just about every cash game lineup because he's so cheap. You did see Fournier play some minutes, so I think he's still very much in the mix. He gets a slight usage bump when Vooch is on the court. And then Elfrid Payton did play minutes last game, though. Vogel has been pretty clear in the idea that he's not, I don't think they see him as the long-term answer at point guard, and they are happy to buzz off his minutes from time to time. On the other side of the ball, Chicago, Dwayne Wade is questionable right now. He sat last game. If I were to guess, I'm going to guess he sits again, and then that definitely puts Jimmy Butler right back to the top of the list in terms of hot big money guys that you can feel pretty comfortable with. He sees a pretty dramatic usage bump when Wade is off the court. We see that he's basically just their first, second, and probably 2A option on offense when there's no Wade. They'll play him big minutes. He played 39 against Detroit the other night. Didn't totally crush it at this price, though. Again, that Detroit matchup wasn't a fantastic one going in. Detroit plays pretty slow. Not like Orlando zips up and down the court by any means, but this is a slightly better matchup for Butler here. I do think you see him, if Wade were to sit, you see him as another chalk play tonight. I'm not so interested in really much else on the Bulls. I suppose possibly Paul Zipser did play a bunch of minutes with no Wade on the court. The minutes didn't really translate to a whole lot. He played 31 minutes, 4 points, four rebounds, an assist, and a block. It's pretty garbage, even at 3,500. So, I mean, you can consider him possibly only because he's so cheap on FanDuel. But really, when teams like Chicago, where they have just kind of one pretty big usage guy, it's hard for the auxiliary parts to get too much going. And that's kind of how I see the Bulls if Wade were to sit. Obviously, Butler takes. He takes kind of a seat if Wade is playing. I'm not so interested in him at that price. So that's a pretty it's a pretty big piece of news that we're going to be waiting to hear about today. But luckily, that's the first game, and Wade is already doubtful, so I really don't think he's going to play. Bad news for Charlotte comes through yesterday with Frank Kaminsky now expected to miss 2 weeks with the shoulder injury. It's not like the Hornets were any great shakes to begin with. They weren't really headed to the playoffs anyway, but you know, losing a guy like Kaminsky, who had been playing pretty big minutes for them, is a blow. But that actually does open up a fair amount of other DFS considerations here for the Hornets. So first off, without Kaminsky, we've seen Marvin Williams play a ton of minutes. Now he's not one of these. He doesn't have enormous upside, though. He has paid his price. He's exceeded his price a few times when he's been able to, one, knock down the three, and then two, just throw in some of those defensive, the blocks and the steals, the defensive stuff. He's not a huge rebounder, considering, even though he's playing the power forward position. Coming off a pretty rough game against Indiana, but he played 39 minutes in that game. I'm happy to pay $5,100 for him on FanDuel. I still think he's a value. I do think the minutes floor on him is really high without Kaminsky. They've shown willingness to play him 35 to 39 minutes in that range, and you're just not really getting that kind of court time from anyone else in this price range. So I do really like Williams here. I like Kemba Walker in this matchup, even though Miami does play a little bit slower. I like Batum. And then Cody Zeller played a bunch last game. He got up to over 30 minutes in the last one. And that's a really encouraging sign for if they feel comfortable with him, that he's fully back from the injury. So he played 34 minutes last game. He went 13-11-2. He's not real cheap, so it's not like you're getting a crazy great value on him. So for instance, I would much rather play Biombo for cheaper on FanDuel at least, and just because he's cheaper, he stands to get more minutes. They're not too dissimilar in terms of how they get their fantasy points. So I'm not saying that you need to just jam Zeller in there because of the high minutes, but he makes an interesting sort of pivot in terms of probably a guy that not too many people are going to be on if you're wanting to play in tournaments. And he falls in some of that price range where you can probably pivot into some lower ownership for maybe a pretty reasonable ceiling if he's going to play a bunch of minutes. So I do like the Charlotte side of the ball here tonight, just because even though the matchup with Miami isn't fantastic. Miami does play pretty slow, but I like it that they're missing. When you have a team that's missing a key part like Kaminsky, a guy who was playing a lot of minutes, it just does open up a lot around the edges. Jeremy Lamb's been getting some minutes off the bench. If you're looking for a punt play, bench guy, not like a safe guy, but Lamb, you could see pile up some points in short order. And he's coming very, very cheap on DraftKings. So that's more just a DraftKings tournament play if you think that he just is seeing more run off the bench without Kaminsky. Miami side of the ball, Tyler Johnson and James Johnson both sat out last game. They're both questionable. If they both play, I'm really not interested in much on the Heat side. If they both sit again, we saw Waiters kind of went nuts last game. The usage for him climbed. He actually was shooting pretty hot from the field, so I wouldn't pencil him for the same exact performance, but he had a real nice game. We see a usage bump for Dragic and probably a slight minutes bump with no Tyler Johnson there. You know, you might see some more Wayne Ellington. You could see some more Magruder. So there will be minutes. If Johnson and Johnson both sit, then that is a lot of minutes to reallocate. And we saw last game that they were happy to throw it to the Josh Richardsons and Ellingtons of the world. So take a look at that situation. I think we'll know. I think we'll have a pretty good idea of what the Johnson guys, no relation, what their injury status is going to be before lineup lock. Again, not interested if they're both playing, but I'm definitely interested if they're both sitting because they will just a lot of those point guard, small forward, you know, stretch four kind of plays on the Miami side of the ball do become interesting with the more minutes. The other 7:30 game is the Hawks and the Nets. Obviously, you know, we're in a situation all season long playing guys against the Nets that you've heard me say it 1,000 times. They play fast, they play bad defense. And anytime you get a chance to play the teams against them, you really need to take a hard look. I'm a little worried about the blowout. Right now, the Hawks are minus 10. The game is in Atlanta. You're worried that the game gets out of hand a little bit just from the Atlanta side of the ball, from a team that already isn't so inclined to run most of their starters a bunch of minutes. So even in close games, you're not seeing many of the, they play a deep rotation. So really the only guy that stands to see huge minutes, even in close games, is a guy like Millsap. The rest of the guys, they will play matchups. They'll sort of ride hot hands. Coach Bud he's not so consistent in who he's running out there from a game-to-game perspective. That doesn't help when you play a team like the Nets and now you have a little, you know, some blowout worry. So that's my concern with the Hawks. The Hawks obviously are in one of, if not the best matchup on the entire slate against Brooklyn. But what are you really, who do you consider safe from this group? Millsap plays a lot of minutes, can kind of, has had, you know, streaks of not paying off his prices. Schrader got benched last game or, you know, didn't see as much run in the fourth. You've got Tim Hardaway coming off the bench. You have Cephalosha who will take minutes here and there. It's just not a very clear fantasy situation for me. And it's a shame too, because obviously we want to play guys against Brooklyn because they just check all the boxes for what you know, pace up, defense down kind of things that you need to look at for DFS. And then we just get with Atlanta, I think we just kind of get stuck with not knowing exactly who to play. So I see a lot of these guys as tournament plays, Millsap, Howard, Hardaway, not really Cephalosha so much, mostly just because he doesn't score enough to really have a huge ceiling. Even Schroeder, if you thought that he was going to, if he was going to maybe just round out some of his minutes in this matchup, but you can just hear me sort of just kind of hedging here because I don't think that it's just not a fantastic situation just because of the way the Hawks deploy their minutes and Brooklyn side of it, forget it. They're all over the place. Who cares? Our system likes Jeremy Lin a little bit. Just mostly on DraftKings, but just the minutes haven't been, they're not playing him more than 25 minutes. So that's a concern for how much he can possibly do in limited court time. The Clippers are -3 favorites over Minnesota tonight in Minnesota. The Timberwolves are, you don't really like targeting guys against the Clippers. Clippers are a very sound defensive team. Don't play at a very fast pace. They get into a lot of those half-court sets. So between having solid defenders and guys like Griffin and Jordan and then Chris Paul, who's obviously one of the best defenders in the league, targeting the Minnesota side of the ball doesn't seem such a great idea for me in cash games. This is an interesting game to stack if you think it stays close, because I just don't think the ownership levels on these guys will be all that high. But getting a guy like Paul and, you know, pairing a guy like Paul and Griffin possibly, and then on the other side, maybe a Towns, if you can fit some of the salary here, I don't mind that as a tournament play just because the upside there should be pretty highly correlated, maybe Wiggins as well. But in terms of cash game safety, this is a game that I'm probably just going to avoid in general. I don't, like I said, I don't mind guys like Chris Paul at 9,000 if you think, but you know, he even only played 30 minutes against the Celtics in a relatively close game. I think, you know, it was 14-point win by the end. I'm a little worried they're still probably managing his minutes in some of these games, so that gets me concerned for his upside. I don't mind Blake Griffin here. That duo of Deng and Towns are not fantastic defenders, but Blake's expensive at 9,500 on FanDuel, so it's not like you're getting a great discount on him either. So this game to me just kind of falls in sort of this no man's land. I don't hate the game necessarily, but I don't love it either. I should say I spoke a little too soon. Griffin is 8,600 on DraftKings. That actually is a very, very good price for him there. So I can actually, I would consider possibly taking the cash game. It's not a risk so much, but I would consider Griffin in cash games on DraftKings just because that $900 difference is pretty substantial for a guy like him. So if you think he's in that 36 minute range, then Blake is definitely a direction you can go over on DraftKings. New York heads to Milwaukee to face the Bucks. It looks like Carmelo Anthony, he's listed as questionable right now, but I believe he's going to play tonight. And he said he was going to play against Milwaukee tonight. So I'm going to take this early in the day, I'm going to take that at his word and think that he is going to play, which means we had to take off some of the usage and rebounding queries that we had going on for guys like, well, really for the whole team, but most notably guys like Porzingis and guys like Rose, who were a lot more attractive plays when Melo was not going to be out there against the Magic last game. He looks like he's going to play, so I'm not so interested in the New York side here. Porzingis is still pretty cheap, but I'm still not completely positive that the Knicks really want to play him big minutes. They just really haven't. And I know they played him 40 against the Golden State in that close game. Then you immediately saw in the back-to-back that he only played 30 in a relatively close game. I think that was purposeful. So in his last four games, Porzingis 32, 31, the big game against the Golden State with 40, and then 30. I have him set at 35 minutes right now. If anything, I do think that's on the high side just because of how the Knicks, I believe, are managing him. But if you think that he's really, in reality, closer to a 40-minute guy like he did against the Warriors, then by all means, run him out there immediately in cash games. I just don't think that that's the case. And if you're at all worried about 30 to 31 minutes at 6,400 on FanDuel, it's a little too risky for me just because, you know, losing 10% of your overall projection because he played 32 instead of 35 minutes, you know, roughly 10%, then that's a pretty big hit to take. And it's really hard to overcome, especially against a team like Milwaukee who's decent on defense. So I don't know the Knicks side of the ball here is much I'm interested in unless Melo were to sit. If Melo all of us, you know, did a take back and were not to play tonight, then Rose and Porzingis do jump up in terms of value for me, but I do think Melo plays. Milwaukee side, they're still up to the same old Milwaukee tricks, right? Like they start Malcolm Brogdon last game, he plays 24 minutes coming off a 35-minute game. So this is classic Jason Kidd. You really, outside of Giannis, you're not so comfortable in terms of how they're going to play their minutes. You know, Brogdon played 41 minutes against Toronto and then 20 last game against Philly. It's just too, and he was pretty good in his 20 minutes. He scored 22 fantasy points in just 20 minutes. That's great, but if you're worried that he's a 20-minute guy and not a 32-minute or 33-minute guy, it's really difficult to think about paying $5,000 for him. You're still getting a deal on Middleton. His minutes have remained pretty solid. Now I think we can basically pencil him in for 33 minutes is a fair number for me, especially not coming on the back-to-back. I think you see him as a relatively chalky play again, especially on FanDuel. He's still 5,700. The price is climbing, but it's climbing sort of commensurate with how he is performing. So he's and actually the Bucks having Middleton has actually cut into Giannis's overall production in the short term. I think I mentioned this last time the Bucks played, but you know, I think we thought that when Parker went down, we'd see this maybe even more of a boost from Giannis, but that really hasn't happened. His production in the last, I don't know, 5 to 6 games has really sort of bottomed out. Not bottomed out, bottomed out relative to his price. He's really hitting 3.5 to 4x on this price, just not good enough. And I think that has a lot to do with Middleton being back on the court, who's just is a guy who will take shots in this offense. So I think that we're still looking at a Giannis that's overpriced, but I do like Middleton and the rest of the Bucks. You know, the point guard situation is too iffy. Thon Maker doesn't really play any minutes, even starting at center. Tony Snell is just, I know he had a good game last game, not a guy that I'd be really too interested in playing. But I do think you see Middleton, especially on FanDuel, as a relatively popular play again tonight. And I do think that's correct, even with the price increase. Houston takes on Utah, coming off that great game. Houston coming off that great game, just to watch the Spurs-Rockets game the other night. They get Utah. Now, typically, this is not a matchup that we really want to target teams facing up against Utah, just because Utah is obviously slow, incredibly defensively efficient, and that's just, you're not getting a ton there. Now, the one interesting, though, piece of this is that Ryan Anderson for the Rockets is doubtful to play tonight. And there's already been a note that came through just kind of while I was talking here that Sam Dekker would start for Anderson if the latter weren't to play. So Dekker at 3,500 on FanDuel, this is one of those situations where I do think that the price would trump the matchup in the sense that, yes, I know Houston's a bad matchup. It's not typically where we want to go. But if you thought you were going to get 29 to 30 minutes out of Sam Dekker, which I do believe is reasonable, if he were going to start for Ryan Anderson, then that is a pretty good, that's a good deal. And it's sort of even with the matchup factored in. So the fact that Anderson is already listed at doubtful and they're already sort of mentioning who the starter would be, that to me feels very much like a situation where I think we can comfortably take Dekker to somewhere in that 29 minute range. And I think all of a sudden you are considering him for cash games. And when we look at punt plays, like a guy like Dekker, what we want to know is, you know, has the team been somewhat committed to playing him in the past? They were. He's been playing less since they brought on Lou Williams, just because they just added another bench scorer and they just haven't had to bring in Dekker as much. But if you're taking Anderson completely out of the mix, then I do think that, you know, 20, maybe let's say 27 to 29 to 30 or 30 minutes is a reasonable expectation for Dekker. Now, again, playing less minutes because of Lou Williams having been there, but this situation does open up a fair amount of just court time that the Rockets will need to redistribute. So I do like Dekker. I'm not really interested in much else on the Rockets side of the ball. The Jazz sat George Hill last game. That looked like more of a rest thing, though there was a little piece of injury news attached to it with his toe. I do think he's going to play tonight. So I think he's going to play. I don't think he plays a ton just because if there's that little injury concern. They did start Dante Exum last game. I suppose if Hill sat and Exum started, Exum possibly is a value. He's like, mostly because Shelvin Mack is still hurt as well. Now, even with that situation, same last game, Exum still only played 25 minutes. So it's not like he's some fantastic pump play. He's brutal to watch if you watch him too. He just doesn't seem like he does anything, frankly. But anyway, maybe consider that situation. Guys like Hayward do get usage bumps. And actually, Derek Favors has already been ruled out too. So you will see some Boris Diaw, Trey Lyles, possibly they move Inglis to a stretch forward in there to play, to round out the starting lineup. We'll probably have to wait on news, but there could be some value depending on which direction they go without Favors. So Utah is definitely a situation that we're going to want to keep our eye on. New Orleans plays Toronto. You know, the Davis Boogie, well, I throw in Drew Holiday here, but let's just mostly call it the Davis and Boogie match, has really not been, I don't think, what the Pelicans thought they were getting when they originally traded for Cousins a few weeks ago. I believe they've won only one game since he's been there. I take that back. They won two games. So, but it's just, it's been, if you watch them, it's been a weird sort of mix. You can tell, you can definitely tell they're still trying to figure out sort of which direction this team is going. My guess is ultimately it does work, but it's a totally new, it's such a new situation to add these big usage guys, especially a guy like Boogie to a team. It just totally changes the dynamic. And I think it's those kind of things take time to figure out. So I applaud the Pelicans for taking the risk. From a fantasy perspective, it's just still a very questionable situation. We've seen games where each of them, Davis and or Boogie, have had huge games. They're not doing them at the same time, which is a concern when you're trying to figure out who sort of stands to hit value on a given night. We've seen their prices, especially Boogie's, really drop in the short term. So Davis is still hanging in that 11,000 range on FanDuel. Cousins is only 9,500 at a center position. That is I believe to be fantastic value for tournaments. It's not really somewhere I want to go with cash game, especially because I already, you know, we already mentioned guys like Biombo and even possibly Zeller that are just coming much cheaper down the line than Cousins. So I don't think you need to take the cash game risk with him. But if for, you know, he's 9,500 on FanDuel, 99 on DraftKings, matchup with here with Toronto is fine for his makeup. So I'm totally fine kind of considering running him on FanDuel at center. And I think that you have to make a really strong case for him on DraftKings at 9,900. He's multi-position eligible, which helps. And so I think I'm okay taking the risk there. And it probably doesn't end up feeling great just because he has had a couple of performances that are well under this price range, and that is somewhat of a concern. And whenever you're playing, you know, with a guy like Davis, there will be games that you just don't see as many shots as he was maybe used to in Sacramento, which throws some of his, you know, season-long stats a little bit out the window. But for the most part, I think I'm probably willing to take the risk on Cousins over on DraftKings. Toronto side, we saw Corey Joseph play some more minutes last game at the point guard with Lowry still out. I think DeRozan is still pretty much in play considering the usage bumps that he gets when Kyle is not on the court. Only 31 minutes last game and 19 points, which is obviously a real, real big problem for his price range. The game before that, though, 37 minutes and went 32-13 for 56 fantasy points against Washington. The truth is definitely somewhere in the middle on those two things. New Orleans is a very good matchup for a guy like DeRozan, so I probably would consider him a little bit more on DraftKings, where he's only 8,700. I don't think I'm really wanting to pay in that 9,000. Excuse me, he's 10,000 on FanDuel, so that's a no thanks situation for me. But 87, a huge difference in price. And like I've said before, if you ever want to just do a quick and dirty way to find pricing, not mistakes, but if you want to use pricing differences as a way to determine value just from one site to the other, if you look at DeRozan's 10,000 on FanDuel and 87 on DraftKings and say to yourself, well, if the truth is somewhere maybe in the middle, then 8,700 on DK is actually coming in as a nice value. So, you know, sometimes you don't need to have a straight up complete projection system to make some of these quick determinations about if you're getting value on a guy. But DeRozan is for sure that on DraftKings. Pacers played the Pistons tonight. This is one of those games too that kind of falls in this no man's land for me. I suppose one interesting guy in the Pacers who has seen an uptick in minutes in the short term, CJ Miles, has played 33 in back-to-back games. He's pretty cheap-ish on FanDuel at 4,100. So I think that he's not a fantastic value. So for instance, I'd rather have Terrence Ross at 45 than CJ Miles at 41 personally. Just as like a quick comparison between sort of guys in the similar price ranges. But yeah, you do like the minutes on Miles that he's been playing a little bit more. The rest of this Pacers team, the Detroit is not a team that you like to target too much in fantasy, just because they're another plotting team. They have some interior presence, they are a pretty good rebounding squad altogether. Detroit is just not a team that I'm typically targeting guys against. And going the other way, Detroit is another one of those squads that, you know, you're at the whim of Stan Van Gundy. If he kind of likes a guy in a matchup, you can see a guy like John Lohr play 37 minutes, and then if he doesn't, you can see him play 24. And trying to guess what the reality is going into a given night is not something I'm increasingly less interested, especially on a big slate, trying to figure that out. You know, Reggie Jackson, that Ish Smith situation, kind of the same. Tobias Harris coming off the bench, Marcus Morris, all these guys, while I would love them if I could just pencil them in for 35 plus minutes each night, that's just not the case with Stan Van Gundy. He wants to play matchups and he wants to ride the guy that he wants to ride, and that's sounded weird for me saying it out loud like that, but I think you get what I mean. So Detroit and Pacers, not really a game I'm going to. And the next game, the Spurs and the Kings, same kind of thing. Spurs, are, for different reason though, Spurs minus 15 favorites here. Would not shock me to see them sit a player or possibly two against the Kings tonight. This is just the kind of situation that Popovich does, where he looks at his team and just says, I am confident enough that we can beat, even with 60% of our starting lineup in there, that we can beat a team like the Kings. That's just how they operate. They're coming off a big minutes game against the Rockets the other night. And this is the front end of the back-to-back where they're going to play the Thunder tomorrow night. So really, to me, I'm basing this off nothing. I have not read anything along these lines yet this morning. So maybe by the time you listen to this, something will have changed. Again, I'm just guessing at this, but from having just followed this stuff a lot in the past and just having sort of, I don't know, an idea of how the Spurs manage situations like this. If there was a game where you saw a guy like Kawhi or Aldridge or Gasol or all of them or one or two of them sit out, this is definitely the game. It has all the markings of it. They're huge favorites. It's the front end of a back-to-back, and the Kings suck. So keep an eye on that as the day goes on. I would put a, not a sizable bet, but I would definitely put a bet in that at least someone relevant from the Spurs sits tonight. And just to go back on something with the Rockets that I mentioned before, because I'm following some news while we're recording here. There was an update that Sam Dekker would actually not start if Anderson sat. It would actually be Eric Gordon, and Eric Gordon actually falls into that same, possibly the same range as Dekker, mostly on DraftKings, where he was coming cheap last game and he's still only 4,300 on DraftKings over there. So that's a fine situation for me to consider even against the Jazz. So all the same things I mentioned about Dekker, and I consider Gordon to be even safer here because he's a guy they've clearly wanted to play minutes anyway. So all the things I said before remain true. Just substitute in Eric Gordon for Sam Dekker. Washington's playing on the back-to-back tonight against Denver. It's not an easy back-to-back to go from Phoenix. They played a high intensity game last night from a scoring perspective. To go from Phoenix and then have to go to the altitude of Denver on a back-to-back is not an easy physical challenge for really any team. So keep that in mind with them. Now they are getting a really, really good matchup against the Nuggets tonight, who the question on their side of the ball is whether Jokic plays or not. My guess is that he does play. He was ruled out really late last game. Maybe I'm reading tea leaves on that kind of stuff, where if when a player is ruled out, it kind of, you know, determines just how injured said player it was or is. So, you know, that's just me sort of making that up. But my guess is Jokic does play. He's questionable right now. If Jokic were to sit, you're obviously going to probably queue up Wilson Chandler again. He played 43 minutes last game, shot 23 times from the field. He's versatile enough that he can play sort of like a 3-4 hybrid, and that is a good way to keep yourself on the court if Jokic weren't to play. So he's definitely in play there, possibly Gary Harris as well. None of the other Nuggets played tons of minutes. You know, Plumlee started and played 31. That's actually a situation I would go back to considering the price. But I'm also just not confident, A, that Jokic sits, or B, we have the news with enough time before a lineup lock. So last time that news came well after the main lineup lock that night, and it really threw a lot of the slate into sort of a flux. I suspect that's the case again here tonight. So keep an eye on the Nugget situation. Them being -2 suggests to me that Vegas thinks he is going to play. And then on the Wizards side, okay, like I said, they're coming off a pretty big minutes game, at least from Wall last night. He played 37. Beal only played 33, but it was good. He wasn't good at 8,000 though, which he's still very expensive thanks to some recent performances that have put him up into sort of the stratosphere in terms of fantasy points. I'd be a little concerned that they run either of those guys huge minutes, considering it's on the back-to-back and it's in Denver. We saw Jan Mahimny outplay in terms of minutes Marcin Gortat last night. Mahimny had just really the stat line of the night. He had 15 points, 9 boards, and 7 steals. You can knock the steals out as a total outlier. Even the best defenders in the world you can't really pencil them in for anywhere close to that. Those kind of numbers and steals. Is interesting that he saw major minutes off the bench. It makes sense too. They've been waiting for him to come back. They've had to play Gortat, I suspect, way more minutes than they've wanted to this season. They are in a playoff push as one of the better teams in the East right now, and it makes sense to get Mahimny run while also lessening the load a little bit on Gortat. But on the back-to-back, I could see the minutes flipping back the other way, just because, again, Mahimny has not played a ton this year. So keep an ear out for that Washington Wizards situation. Most of them are fairly priced at this point. We've seen minutes dips for guys like Markieff and for Porter in the short term as they added Bogdanovich, who's played a little bit more. And I just think that they're more the Wizards have struggled this year mostly on the fact that their bench is bad, and they've had to play their starters tons of minutes, because when you put in guys like Trey Burke and Oubre and Jason Smith and Satoransky, guys like this, and that's your second unit, any lead that you had dwindles, and any way that you're trying to keep close in the game makes it even more of a struggle. But adding Bogdanovich and adding Mahimny back into this lineup does make it so that they don't have to play those starters tons and tons of minutes. And I do think you see the trend continue that direction, because their playoff seeding is not that their playoff seeding is locked up, but they're in the playoffs in the East. And so at that point, make it to the playoffs and have fresh legs. And I do think that is the plan for the Wizards going forward. So just keep that in mind when you're trying to project some of their minutes. Final game on the slate is the Warriors and the Celtics. Horford is probable to play tonight. He's questionable to play tonight. So we'll have to wait for word there. We saw Klay Thompson get into some foul trouble last game and kind of buzzed off his minutes. I'd have no problem going back to Klay in this matchup here, depending on it. You know, they're going to struggle to guard part of that backcourt, considering Isaiah Thomas is going to guard one of either Curry or Klay. I still think that people are going to look at that Klay Thompson recent game log and be concerned with it. But at 6,700 on FanDuel, that price is excellent. It's excellent for this kind of matchup. It's excellent for the fact that he can, if he gets hot from three, he pays this off pretty easily, right? Now, he's had some really bad performances since Durant went down. He had a 13-point performance for 13 fantasy points against the Bulls, and then that aforementioned 17-point fantasy point performance against the Hawks, where he got in foul trouble and only played 29 minutes. In between was the 29-4-1 game against the Knicks. And I just think that I really think that the Chicago and Hawks game are the outliers for him. I'm hoping that's the case too, and I'm hoping other people don't think that, because I love to play Klay tonight. 6,700 on FanDuel is a fantastic price for me. I'm not paying too much attention to those short-term game logs for him. This is a situation where he's not going to be in 100% of my cash games. It's too early to make a call like that. But I do think we get separation because people will talk themselves out of him, and I don't think that's correct. I think you can look at Curry as an upside play, though his price, because he has been pretty good, has come up to over 10,000. Not a great deal on him, all things considered. I just think you can still consider Draymond. He's only 8,200. He should see a lot of minutes in this matchup. And what we've seen too is now the Golden State's -8.5 favorites, but they haven't really been as high powered an offense without Durant there. And I think that a team like Boston, that line to me strikes me as a little bit high. It's not up into the total blowout range that where you're totally worried about that, but I can definitely see a situation where Boston keeps it closer than that. So I can consider guys on the Warriors in terms of cash games. Boston, not as much. They're getting a little healthier, especially if Horford came back. You're going to see some of those minutes round out, but definitely a GPP game if you wanted to stack it. You know, do like an Isaiah Curry stack makes a lot of sense to me for upside, like even Isaiah Curry and Draymond, something like that, or, you know, Klay thrown in there. Maybe not all three of them in a tournament because you probably cap some of your upside, and then just maybe try to pick out a cheap Celtic or two to sort of just fill in around the edges for a close game. So interesting game, should be a fun one to watch. I'm more interested in the Warriors side of the ball than anything else. Full day in the NBA today for sure. A lot to consider. It's only noon Eastern time right now. There's going to be news coming in probably the entire day that we're going to want to monitor. And now I'm seeing a note that Jimmy Butler's sick today and uncertain. So this is one of those ones, folks. Going to have to take a listen to the news, have to watch the news all day, and we're going to have to just make adjustments on the fly. But that's how the NBA rolls. I am going to jump off here and get on with Chris Durrell. He's going to be talking some PGA going off tomorrow with the Valspar Championship. Good luck with your NBA lineups tonight. And we'll be back again tomorrow talking NBA. Let's talk some PGA. All right, I'm here with Chris Durrell, DFSR's lead hockey guy, lead PGA guy, lead NASCAR guy. He's a man who wears many hats here for us at DFSR.
I love
Chris,
hats.
How's it going?
Yeah. Doing good.
I like
glad to hear your voice.
Yeah, me you too. I'm bald, so that's why I try to wear hats. Chris is here today to talk a little bit about tomorrow's PGA contest going off for DraftKings. We have the Valspar, I believe it's the Valspar Championship for the uninitiated PGA guys. Chris is going to talk a little bit about what kind of thought he puts into making PGA lineups on a given week, what kind of stuff he breaks down, and just kind of give an insight into, especially for those that don't do PGA a lot, an insight to just how you can maybe even just get started with it. So, Chris, from like a from the uninitiated point of view, or just like the rookie novice kind of point of view, these small, you know, I suspect that most golf people know, you know, the British Open and, you know, the Masters and the big ones, but these smaller tournaments like the Valspar Championship, how much do you see there being an edge when it comes to like being able to put together lineups for these like maybe lesser known tournaments?
I'm glad you brought up Edge, because last week was the WGC, which is the World Golf Championship. They have four a year. It was down in Mexico, it was a non-cut event, so there's only 77 players. Usually there's 156. So last week with the no-cut event, the edge is kind of minimized just because it is a limited field and there is no cut. This week we're back to a full field event. I believe there's 144 players, something like that. So after the first 2 days, there's going to be a cut. So your edge is going to be a little bit more when it comes to these large field, two-round, 36-hole cut events.
And those guys, and just for those that don't know too, and I get that some people are going to be like, okay, come on, this is like golf 101 stuff. And you know, you might jump out of it just because you're thinking, oh, okay, everyone knows this. But for those that don't know about golf, you know, just explain real quick why the cut is so important when you're making lineups.
Yeah, it's high variance because of that cut. We're going to see 70 golfers plus ties that are going to make it through the weekend. The rest go home. So that's two rounds of golf that you're not going to get scores accumulated for these players. Now, that's more important on a week where there's going to be minus 20 score, something like that. There's going to be a lot of birdies that you're going to miss out on if you miss those cut. This week's a little bit different. This is one of the toughest courses outside of the majors. So you're not going to lose a whole bunch of scoring, but it's not like the majors where you may be able to get through with five or six guys in your lineup that made the cut into the weekend and still be able to cash big, because there's a lot more, I guess, there's a lot more placement on where a guy ends up finishing. So those points are a little more than the actual birdie eagle bonuses, which we're not going to see too much of this week.
Interesting. Yeah, I was wondering, that was my next question about difficulty of course. When the course is really difficult, obviously any course favors the better golfer. But when you get into these courses that you deem difficult, how do you deem it difficult? And then what kind of golfer do you look for when this is like maybe this is the makeup for such a course?
Yeah, for sure. So you can usually tell. I mean, just going back in time, and first thing you do is just look at average final score. So like the last few years of this course, you're looking at like a minus 8, minus 10, somewhere in there. Whereas you get to early in the year, we've seen, I think, like 4 or 5 tournaments in a row where the winning score was like minus 17 to minus 25. So that's usually the first thing. And just see how many birdies. And then, of course, PGAtour.com is really good because they'll actually give you a hole-by-hole view. You don't get to see the whole hole, but you get to see the holes, how they're made up. This one is tree lined with sand and water everywhere, which is going to make a lot of scores. We're going to see a lot of bogeys, double bogeys, water hits, that kind of stuff. So that's really what makes it harder. So normally something that's very highly correlated with DraftKings scoring is birdie or better percentage, of course, because I mean birdies are what's going to make you your points on your DraftKings lineup. On a week like this where we're not going to see as many birdies, something I really look at a little bit more and weigh a lot higher is the bogey avoidance, and that's just the percentage of time a player doesn't make bogey or worse. So you really want those players that are going to be able to control their shots, place them well, and not make those bogeys.
So this favors more a consistent approach, possibly, right?
Then, yeah,
like
exactly.
you know, you need to be hitting fairways, and just maybe not tin cupping it. That's my one golf reference that I know.
That's a good one.
Well, not tin cupping it down the fairway. So with that in mind, then, so you know, looking at this week and you know some of the things that you've been looking for, you know, you said look bogey avoidance and just maybe just trying to go for a more consistent play. Any other stat that you're kind of honing in on for this week to try to pull out some different golfer names, which we'll get to in a second. But, you know, besides those, is there anything else that you're kind of looking for this week?
Yeah, big time. This week, I'm not really looking at driving distance just because of the tree-lined fairways, the importance on placing the shots. There's a lot of double doglegs out there. Like I said, with water and bunkers on the fairways, it's going to force players to be really, I guess, conscious on where they land the ball so that they have a chance to hit the green. Because of that, something I'm looking at a little more than driving distance is driving accuracy, but more importantly, strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach. It's going to be a second shot course, so strokes gained approach is going to be very high this week. And something I'm looking at, Fantasy Golf Man from Fantasy Insiders kind of came up with this, and kind of a ball striking 2.0. So ball striking was driving distance plus driving accuracy plus GIR, greens and regulation. So it's kind of a player's, I guess, a look at the overall driving accuracy. Though if a guy's, you know, 1 foot off the fairway, it doesn't take that into account on his driving accuracy. The guy may still hit the green. But so what we try and did, or what he I guess suggested, was to combine strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach to make this new ball striking 2.0 stat. So that's something I've added to my sheet this week. It was very easy because I have raw stats on the sheet, so it was just an easy calculation, easy formula of just addition, adding those together, and then ranking them. So that's something I'm looking at this week big time, because strokes gained off the tee kind of looks at everything, compares a player versus the field, how many strokes they gain from the tee box, and then how many they gain on their approach to the green. So that's something I'm going to be highly tracking, not just this week, but going forward.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense, because one thing that I've always tried to wrap my brain around a little bit is just the stats, how stats correlate to, like, in golf, how stats correlate to a projection in golf, right? Like, you can, like, in other sports, you can just do this really clear binary, like, you know, a basketball player is going to score points when the ball goes in the net, or he gives the ball to another player who's going to go in the net.
Yep.
But golf, and you can sort of wrap your head around, in the end, coming up with some, like, weighted mean projections. The golf has always sort of not flummoxed me, and that's... in that sense, but it's always this one that just seems like, I don't know if the variance is too high or just these, you just need to come up with, you know, like you said, these new sort of stats that are going to better allow you to make a predictive measure. So, and I know you said you've done a lot of work putting in a lot of this stuff, and you know, you mentioned your sheet. If you go into the chat room, a lot of times on days of, you know, where golf is going down, Chris is into the chat room on dfsr.com talking golf, giving access to his sort of aggregated stats that he's looking at, and it's, people found it really, really helpful. So go check that out before you try to set a golf lineup. Going into just a couple guys you're looking at this week that fit some of the criteria that you mentioned before, playing consistently, you know, just not trying to make mistakes here, trying to make the cut. Who are some guys that you've sort of targeted this week that you're going to be building lineups around?
Yeah, so I wrote about Henrik Stenson. He's going to be mostly a GPP play. I'm not 100% sure yet. I originally thought because he withdrew last week in the first round, like 9 or 10 holes in or something, withdrew, screwed, like, I would say 80% of my lineup. So last week wasn't a good week for me. Yeah. I'm going right back to the well with him because I originally thought that people would be off him because of that withdraw, but he fits the course so well. He doesn't have stats on the PGA Tour, so I can't really look at that approach plus off the tee, but looking at the Euros Tour stats from last year, he was number one in drive and accuracy, and he was number one in greens and regulation, so I would almost suspect that he would be right near the top of that stat. So I think he's going to make a great GPP play. For cash games, I don't personally play cash games, but I don't think this week you need to go up into that 11K range. To build a cash game, one guy I would look at if I was doing it would be Bill Haas. He kind of fits the accuracy, and he's had some good course history here as well. He's actually number one in my model this week. Right up in that other GPP play would be Justin Thomas. He's the most expensive golfer this week. He had a pretty good finish last week. He's won 3 times this year, and he's number two in that strokes gained approach plus off the tee. And then another guy I really like who hasn't really been talked about, something I use a lot, is FanShare Sports. They track players' tags on social media, whether it be touts writing about them, whether it be people just mention them in an article on Twitter. They take that all together and put it as like their most tag list. Well, I thought originally writing my article that I maybe had some edge with some low ownership, but 3 of the top 4 guys I wrote about are in the top 5 most mentioned. One guy that kind of fell below a little bit that I'm looking at is Billy Horschel. He's number 6 in that approach plus off the tee stat that I was talking about. He doesn't have the course history, so I think when trying to gain some lower ownership, it's starting to appear like you really fade the course history. So guys with a lot of good course history, people are going to be on them. People without course history or maybe some spotty course history, like I think Billy Horschel finished 56th here in 2013, people might just look at that, you know, he's only been here once, 56, nothing special. He could be in that 10% or lower range, so that's guy I'm targeting for sure.
That's really interesting what you mentioned. So you mentioned a couple of different things here, and you know, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but you brought up a lot of really interesting points that had me chewing on some different golf ideas. The one is going back to what you were saying about Henrik Stenson is, you know, sometimes you can't even do this one-for-one comparison because these guys play on different tours, so you can't even look at. This is where I think PGA really favors the amount of research that you've put into it. You need to, you know, it's a lot of other sports we were talking about this off the air, but a lot of other sports you can kind of automate to some degree, right? Like you can, yep. You know, the guy's either playing or he's not, you kind of know what his stats are going to be, and then you kind of move on. Golf is one of those ones that, you know, you need to really take a look at all these different things, especially when you can't even compare one tour to another tour because you don't have the same stats coming
or course to course.
Well, that was the second point I was going to say is, yep. You know, it makes a lot of sense of why you would want to fade course history, because you know, what's the sample size you get on a course? Like, how many times are you going to play a course? Are these golfers going to play a course in their life? I mean, realistically, 10, 15 tops, you know?
Yeah.
That's an incredibly small sample size, really, in the grand scheme of things. And so,
with four rounds each, that's minimal.
Right, exactly. It's not enough to really make any huge judgment. So I like the approach of what you're saying is just maybe at times ignore some of the course history and just say, you know, do they fit other pieces, like you mentioned, do they fit other check marks that would, yeah. And maybe they just ran bad for a weekend. You know, you can run bad. You can run bad for multiple weekends. You can run bad for a year, probably, in golf.
These are all professionals, so.
Oh, yeah. So
just a quick point on that. Same thing with current form. You could see a guy that's maybe missed two or three cuts in a row. These guys are professionals. That doesn't mean he's going to miss four cuts in a row. I like targeting that as well because people are going to be like, whoa, 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 this guy's not playing very good. He can come out and have a win. Most guys will come out and they can grab a top 10 any week. So if you can grab a 2-3% ownership guy who can possibly get a top 10 and, you know, other people aren't going to be using him, those are the plays that can win you the tournaments.
Yeah, I love that. I love that thought process. Like I said, you go over to the DFSR.com, check out Chris's article. You can go over and check out some of the stats that he's put together that are helping him pick out some of these plays. I think you said the guys you're looking at this week, Stenson, Thomas, and Haas at the top of the list. Am I right about that?
Definitely. Charles Howell in there as well. Chucky Three Sticks.
I love the nicknames. All right, man. Be good. Good luck with golf. Good luck with the Valspar Championship. Thanks for bringing some golf insight to the NBA pod. Hopefully people go and throw in a lineup there or two. Enjoy your golf this weekend, man.
Cheers. Talk to you soon.